and welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, my name is Christina Garcia, Director of Community Programs here at Sojourner House.
Hi, my name is Shannon McDonald. I'm the Communications Manager at Sojourner House. I use she, her pronouns, and I love to say that my job at Sojo is to connect our community to the work that we do.
Fantastic. And we're hoping to do a little bit of that later in the show. We'll hear more about the work that Sojourner House does for our community here in Rhode Island. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
So I have been reading this book by Angie Cruz. The title is How Not to Drown in a Cup of Water. It's a really common metaphor used in the Dominican culture. So it's like often that you just can get so overwhelmed by ordinary circumstances and you feel like you're drowning in an ocean by yourself, but it's really just a cup of water. It helps you like ease your anxiety when you feel like everything is going wrong. And it is a metaphor that my mom used to tell me all the time because I'm a pretty anxious person and more so when I was younger. So she always be like, Titina, you know, don't drown yourself in a cup of water. It's going to be okay. It's a great book. I highly recommend it.
I've never heard that saying. That's beautiful. And could have been helpful as an anxious child as well.
So it's like self-help, but coming kind of from this particular cultural background.
Yeah, like self-help, but just almost like a reality check at the same time, like level set yourself, like, you know, it's just, you're just drowning over a cup of water, right? Like you're going to be fine. And then you, even the visual of the cup of water helps because you're just like, oh, I mean, it's okay, right? This too shall pass.
It's contained. It's finite. There's a clear path out.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah. What about you, Shannon? What have you been reading?
I've been on a romance kick for many months, and because I'm such a romance fan, I decided to kind of read some of the classics. So I actually just finished reading Emma by Jane Austen, which I was really proud of. That was an audiobook read on my commute to work. Just finished the other day, and it was fabulous. I'd already read Pride and Prejudice and Persuasion, but I'd never read Emma. And now that I'm done with that, I really sped through Vampires of El Norte, which is like a Mexican horror gothic, but also a romance. So,
okay.
That was fantastic. And I also just flew through it's a duology so far, but I think they're making a third one. It's Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies. And it's for adults, but I have a 9-year-old sister and I've actually been thinking of reading it to her. It's very whimsical, but also for any like adventure lovers. It's these two scientists who their specialty is investigating fairies. And each book is them in like somewhere else in the world. Like one's this kind of like Nordic mountain snowy horror of a town. And it's them kind of, a lot of it focuses around like lore. And I love it.
I'm interested to hear, as someone who is like dipping their toe into adult romance lately, particularly romantasy, I'm curious to hear kind of how you felt about Emma versus kind of the more modern, even like you think about Bridgerton, it's supposed to be set about the same time, but Bridgerton was written by a modern author as a historical novel versus Emma and Pride and Prejudice and all of those books being written during the actual kind of like Regency period. So I'm curious to if you felt like it was different in any way, or if you felt like it was more similar than you expected it to be to modern things that you've been reading.
I was surprised by how modern the humor was, like the same type of jokes still, like her. Also, Jane Austen is kind of the framework for a lot of period romance. So I'm sure Julia Quinn used Jane Austen as an influence when writing the Bridgerton series. So you can see kind of the archetypes of the characters, like even Emma's, her father's a hypochondriac and he's very anxious. And you see that kind of archetype of like the anxious older person kind of regurgitated in most period dramas. And the same with the type of love story. Not really in Emma, but Pride and Prejudice. I mean, if you look at season 2 of Bridgerton, the main couple is Mary, Lizzie, and Darcy.
That's very true. All right. So I think touching on Bridgerton, a book that is also a show, kind of brings us into a nice transition. Have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
I binge watched all in one day The Gentlemen, which is a new show on Netflix. The way that the description, you know how they give you like those little blurbs of like what the show is about? It was supposed to be like a marriage of like the Kingsmen with Peaky Blinders. And I loved Peaky Blinders, obsessed with it. And I really did like Kingsmen, and it was really good. I watched all 8 episodes on one day. I really liked the acting. I liked the way the story unfolded. I think that the way they ended it was really a good setup for part 2 of it.
Is there anyone in it that we would recognize, or is it kind of like a bunch of like newer unknown cast?
Theo James is in it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Juan Carlo Espirito, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Okay. And Theo James was in Divergent, right? Am I thinking of the right guy?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he got to actually be British in this one.
Yes. Yes.
I'm happy for him.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating storyline, right? Like, it's basically like these people are like, they own manors and they're very wealthy, but the drug industry, like the cannabis industry, has like done this weird contract where they grow all of their weed in the basement of the manor. And now the drug lords don't want to leave the manor alone. So it's like they're these like lords are, you know, trapped in their house with these drug dealers.
It seems like a solid plan, though. You know, like if you don't want people poking around where your weed is, put it in like a house, you know, like put it in this house of this very important person. So that way people aren't going to like, you know, be coming around there, poking around.
Yep. Very smart. And then so, yeah, it's about that and the drama, and it's a lot of adventure, a lot of shooting, but it's entertaining.
Shannon, what about you?
I'm currently watching The Summer I Turned Pretty. I had too many people recommend it. I couldn't ignore it. And it's really good. It's set in Massachusetts. And the only thing that's annoying me, because I like the show, is that they didn't film Massachusetts, so it doesn't look like it. As somebody who lives in Mass. But I like all the mentions of they're Red Sox fans. And I like that. I am also just caught up on The Great, which is one of my favorite shows. The last season came out a few months ago with Elle Fanning and Nicholas Hoult, follows Catherine the Great, and the costumes are beautiful. It's hilarious. And it made me really love Elle Fanning. I'm excited to see what she does next.
Yeah, that's been on my to-watch list for a while. And I thought because it was like a comedy and not taking itself too seriously that my partner like might want to watch it with me. And I was like, do you want to watch this thing? And he was like, absolutely not. And I was like, okay, then I guess I'll just add that to the long list of things I watch by myself.
I recommend, I don't know if you've seen Poor Things. It blew my mind. Now one of my favorite movies, but it's the same writer from The Great. So if you liked either, you'd like the other.
Okay. For me, I've mostly been doing some rewatching of things. I finally watched with my partner The Marvels, because the first time I watched it by myself while I was sick. So we did a whole thing where we watched all the Marvel movies together, kind of like when we first got together, because he was like, this is a thing you really enjoy. If you're going to make me go to all these movies, like at least I should understand like everything that's going on. But he never has been like a huge fan of it. He's always just been like, all right. And then we come in with the PG-13 violence and then we save the day and blah, blah, blah. So when I was homesick, I was like, oh, I'll just watch the Marvels. And then like, because he probably isn't that interested in watching it anyway. And then I told him that I was like, oh, yeah, well, I was home. I watched the Marvels. And he was like, you watched it without me? And I was like, yeah, because I didn't think you would care that much. So we watched it together. So now he's, for the most part, caught up, about as caught up as he's probably going to be with Marvel stuff, because I think the TV shows, like, I don't think he's ever going to watch Ms. Marvel. Like, I might go back and finish it.
Oh, I was going to ask if you've watched that. I think it's underrated.
No, it was one of those things that after I watched the Marvels, I was like, oh, man, maybe I should have finished Ms. Marvel before I did this. Yeah, I don't know. It was just one of those things that, like, I started the first episode and was kind of like, okay, and then just, like, never made it back. But it's not necessarily because, like, I disliked it for any reason. It was just, like, I don't know, not grabbing me in the moment at that time. But I think I probably will go back and watch it now at this point, seeing as it seems like they're going to make Kamala Khan a bigger part of the MCU. It's the... Well, I don't know if I should even say this and spoil after credit scenes for people.
But she's one of my favorite most recent superheroes. So I when you get to that point in your Marvel watch, you should stick it through.
No, I definitely will give it another try. But so we did that. And then I was just telling Dave about this before we started the show. We also, in preparation for going to the theaters and seeing Dune Part 2, we rewatched the first part of Dune. Which I appreciated, because I think if I had went into Dune Part 2 not having rewatched it, I probably would have been like, because a lot happened in that movie. They covered a lot and it was only part one. So that tells you how convoluted this novel is. And I was saying, I take no greater pleasure than saying the words of Dune wrong. I'll be like, well, Paul, he's the knick-knack paddywhack, you know, because I can never remember the word for, like, what Paul is supposed to be, that he's the messiah of the universe, but there's, like, a word for it, and I never remember what it's called. But at this point, I, like, refuse to learn what it's called. My brain just, like, will not grab onto those syllables and, like, internalize them. It's just like, no, that's nonsense.
I'm testing myself. Is it Mata Beeb?
No, it's, like, a K word and then an H word. But it's like a KW word. So it's like already we're starting off with complicated consonants next to each other. And but there's also like a couple things, because there's also like what the Fremen call it. So there's like multiple words. There's a lot of words going around. Frank Herbert in the 60s was like, let me just take some Arabic and just throw it around. You know, it's not like there's a whole culture connected to that or anything that anyone would mind. But I enjoyed it as much rewatching it as I did the first time, even without the knowledge of the novel, the way that my partner goes into it being a really big fan of the novels, because there are sequels and stuff where it gets real wild, apparently. I just got snippets from when he was reading it where he'd just be like, yeah, and so this person's a sandworm now. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, yeah, he's a descendant of who? He's a descendant of Paul, but he's also a sandworm. And I'm like, okay, Frank, I think you lost the plot a little bit. So that was a good rewatch, and I feel prepared whenever we find time to go and watch Dune 2.
And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Explore a world of languages with your library and Mango Languages. This online language learning system can help you learn languages like Spanish, French, Brazilian Portuguese, Mandarin Chinese, Urdu, Igbo, and so much more. Self-paced lessons and real-world conversations make Mango Languages perfect for learning a new language or brushing up on old skills. Get started at cranstonlibrary.org/databases. Cranston Public Library is pleased to bring poetry to our patrons, all without leaving the comfort of home. No internet, computer, or smartphone required. A recorded poem read by a CPL staff member will be available every Tuesday afternoon. To listen, call 401-900-1090 and be sure to check back weekly to hear what's new. For more information about this service, please visit cranstonlibrary.org/onTheLine.
So I want us to have enough time to talk about Sojourner House. So let's start at the beginning. For anyone who isn't familiar with Sojourner House, where are you and what kind of work do you guys do?
Yeah, so the mission of Sojourner House, I figured I'll start there, is to promote healthy relationships by providing culturally sensitive support, advocacy, housing, and education for victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking, and to effect systems change. Our drop-in center is on 1570 West Minister Street in Providence, and that's just, you know, for any client, anybody walking in that's interested in learning about resources, services, We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So that's where we primarily have a lot of our programs are in that office. We have multiple offices across the state in addition to residential programs across the state. So our programs are sort of in that three prong, domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. We're the only domestic violence agency in the state that offers all three of them, because our view is that we look at our clients comprehensively and holistically. And statistically, if you are a victim of domestic violence, then you could also have a higher likelihood of being a victim of sexual assault and human trafficking, you know, or the other way around. So we decided a couple of years ago that it was important to revise our mission statement to reflect who our client really is.
To give like a kind of a historical angle of the work that we do, we've been around almost 50 years now. Sojourner House was founded in 1976. Our founders were a group of Providence residents, Brown University students, staff, and alumni who were concerned about what was then a silent epidemic, and that was domestic violence. Since then, like Christina was saying, we've expanded our mission statement. So now we serve not only survivors of domestic violence, but also people affected by human trafficking and sexual abuse. In our nearly 50-year history, I think we're at 48 years now, we've supported and empowered more than 60,000 survivors of abuse across the Ocean State and beyond.
And in a little bit more particulars, what does that kind of support look like in terms of the programs and services that you all offer?
Yeah, we've grown very quickly, very large in the last couple of years, just because we've, you know, the more we do this work, the more we realize what services, additional services are required or needed. So like, you know, just to kind of give you a quick overview of what we offer, the helpline was one of the first things that Sojourner House launched in the beginning, which is a 24-hour, 7 days a week. People can call and then either to get immediate emotional support, but also get resources and referrals, information for themselves or for someone that they care about who could be impacted. So we have the helpline, and then the drop-in center is what I mentioned before, the location on 1570 Westminster. There is, it's a hub of most of the client services. So there people can come and participate in support groups. Here are the offices for our coordinated entry housing program. Also, our immigration services, we're the only domestic violence agency that is certified to provide immigration services to survivors of violence. And then also our clinical services are here. We have a very robust clinical program that serves adults, but also children as well. Children that witness violence or children that have been impacted directly by violence. And then we also have a SOAR program, which is one of the only ones that we have in the state of Rhode Island, which really helps individuals get access to SSI and SSDI services and benefits. And then other programs that are not housed here on 1570 Westminster is our residential program. We have the largest residential program in the state of Rhode Island, and that includes emergency shelter, rapid rehousing, which we provide rental assistance for folks to stay in their homes. We also have several properties that are owned by Sojourner House that could do transitional housing. We also have a human trafficking safe place. We also have the only transitional house for men or victim or anybody that identifies as LGBTQ. We also have a very strong education program where we provide trainings to other organizations, but also we have a presence in schools in Woonsocket and also Smithfield, where we have a school-based advocate that is like in the school, and it provides a resource for not only the teachers, but also the students in the school as well. So that's some of the stuff that we offer.
At this point in time, I think we have more than 30 programs. So there's a lot to list.
So you talked in your mission statement about also trying to put forward systemic change. So does your organization also do advocacy in order to change like some of the laws and things around the rights and protections of survivors?
Absolutely. Just the other day, I was working with our executive director on submitting testimony. There's a bill being heard. I think the decision's being made this week about kind of expanding the eligibility of victims of crime compensation benefits. So we're constantly working with legislators across the state, and we work with a few different lobbyists to kind of promote the best interests of our clients. So whether that's like expanding eligibility, whether that's working on making housing more accessible. Last year, we were involved in a number of bills related to like lowering rental application costs or helping overturn the like eviction. I forget what the exact terminology is, but hiding eviction records. Because a lot of our clients, we do a lot of housing work, like Christina was saying, because one of the primary reasons that survivors of abuse aren't able to leave and exit abusive relationships is because of a lack of safe and affordable housing. So a lot of our work revolves around trying to make that process easier and more accessible for people to be able to exit safely and find economic stability. So yeah, we're involved in a ton of legislation. The season's just kicking off, so I'm prepared to write a lot of testimony in that regard.
So if someone is listening to this episode and they are in a difficult situation or they know someone that's in a difficult situation, what are your recommendations?
I would recommend just giving us a call or stopping by, even just to kind of inquire about what options are available. You're never required to do anything or to take further steps. You're never required to make police reports or like a lot of people think the only work we do is related to like shelter or housing. We have community clients as well. So even if all that would be helpful to you is kind of getting access to maybe a clinician or a support group, we can provide information about that just to kind of provide you with a kind of a toolkit to decide your own pathway forward. All about empowerment here. So never going to make decisions for somebody. We're just going to give them the tools that they need to begin their own healing process, however that looks like for them. So like Christina was saying earlier, our drop-in center is at 1570 Westminster Street in Providence. That's open 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, but our helpline is open 24/7. So if somebody has a question, wants to get resources for a friend they're worried about or info for themselves, they can call anytime.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest is to try to get as much knowledge and information as you possibly can, either for yourself or for someone that you know that could be in a situation. And then if it's someone that you know, I always encourage people to just be patient, right? It takes, statistically up to 7 times for someone to try to leave an abusive situation. More often than not, you will go back to that relationship. So just try to come from a place that is judgment-free. And I know that's challenging because you really care about this person. And, you can see things in the outside that they can't see, in the inside. When you're in the middle of that kind of the eye of the storm, a lot of times, survivors or victims, it's really hard for them to think critically. It's really hard for them to be able to articulate what their situation is or what their needs are. So to be a friend is to really be patient, really be judgment-free, and always listen first. Don't assume that you know better than this person. And just, be there, right? Just, try your best not to give up on them because they're going to need you more than ever.
Absolutely. Going off of that, I also think that if somebody's confiding in you about their own experience, I think like using validating statements is huge. It takes a lot for people to be able to kind of self-identify, like any kind of abuse, really. So to just tell that person, like, I believe you, that's wrong that this happened to you. Like, thank you for trusting me with this. Like, I think that's huge to provide that back. That also, it just shows that you're listening.
Mm-hmm. And so is there anything that either of you want our audience to know about Sojourner House and the work that you all do that we haven't touched on?
I'll just like highlight certain things. Thursdays here on 1570 Westminster Street, we have what we call a housing clinic. It's every Thursday from 9 to 1. Anyone can come in, anyone who has any sort of housing insecurity. Our focus is to support survivors and victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, or human trafficking. So if you don't fall within that category, we are also, you know, very well connected to other agencies and other resources. So please come if you do have a housing insecurity, Thursdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Something I'd like to highlight is we've really expanding our sexual health program recently. That's something that's very intimately tied with like healthy relationships, which is what we promote at Sojourner House, is having knowledge about your body, having knowledge about how to keep yourself and others safe. So we offer free rapid HIV testing and Hep C testing. Those are available drop-in at our drop-in center. So people don't have to make an appointment. They can stop by. It generally takes about 20 minutes. So somebody could do it on their lunch break, free, confidential. We also have condoms, dental dams. We can provide people with pregnancy tests and emergency contraceptive pills. And these are all free of charge. I think this is something a lot of people don't know, that we're able to provide people in our community.
And just to, so also, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So if there is a time to get tested, it is definitely, you know, now, but we're definitely going to do an additional outreach in April.
Fantastic. So if people want to learn more about your resources and find you online or to call on the phone, how could they do that?
So our website is pretty easy. It's www.sojournerri.org. So that's SOJOURNERRI.org. So feel free to look there. But I also encourage you to follow us on social media, because then you'll see more up-to-date things, like if we're launching a new support group, or if we're going to have a fundraiser at a local restaurant, or we're also just sharing like some educational things too, like maybe some facts about like the transmission of STIs, or some cool talking tips for how to talk to a friend you might be worried about, might be in kind of an unsafe situationship. So it's a good way to stay connected with us and stay connected about our current issues.
Fundraising also reminded me, if people have listened to this episode and they want to support the work that you're doing, can they find information on how to do that on your website as well?
Absolutely. If you go to our website right now, you'll actually get a big pop-up for, we have two major fundraising events every year, and one of them is coming up in May. It's on May 31st. So there's the pop-up on our website right now is inviting people to attend our 9th annual Sojo Mojo Breakfast. Our goal is to raise $300,000, not just at that event. That would be a lot. But we have an annual spring fundraising campaign. So it kicks off on April 1st and it goes until the breakfast. So we're trying to get as many people in our community involved. In connection with that, like I said, the breakfast is the end of it all. But throughout it, we have a lot of really fun events going on. We're partnering with the Guild, the brewery in Pawtucket. They're having a special beer just for Sojo for 2 weeks. So proceeds will be donated to us. We're doing an event at Ogie's Trailer Park, the restaurant. It's a drag show event. We did it last year. This will be the second annual one. It's really, really fun. And again, all proceeds are being donated to Sojourner House's spring campaign. Ladder 133, the restaurant in Providence, who has fantastic burgers. They have a weekly trivia night on Tuesdays. And for every trivia night, which again is on Tuesdays, every trivia night in April, the proceeds are going to go to Sojourner House. We're doing a drag bingo night at Black Sheep. So if you follow us online, you'll get to see all these information, all these details about these events. And if that sounds like a good way for you to support our work, then that would be awesome. If events aren't for you, there's a big button that says donate, and that takes you right to a place where you can contribute monetarily and support the work that we do every day.
Fantastic. And all of those events sound like a great way. If you don't have a lot to contribute, but you can make your night out benefit something bigger than just your entertainment for that evening. So that all sounds fantastic. And we will try to shove as many details about as many of those things as we can in the description.
Fantastic.
So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish related question. So I thought I would ask you both, what is one book that you always recommend to people who want to understand more about the work that you do and the space that you're operating in terms of, you know, domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and the support of survivors?
I'll go first, which I'm excited because it's actually from a local author. The book is called Consent for Kids. It's by an author who's based in Providence named Rachel Bryan. I'm biased because I used to intern for her, but the book hadn't come out yet. So the book is fabulous. It is a children's book, but I think it kind of gives the bare bones of ideas about setting boundaries, why they're important, talking about consent, and kind of the ideas that go into creating healthy relationships, both with romantic partners and other people in your life, friends, roommates. It talks about all the key elements that are important and why we should be talking to people from a young age about how to set these boundaries, how to treat people with respect, how to listen properly to others, how to handle rejection in a way that is not aggressive or scary to others. I think this book, any opportunity I have to tell a parent, I think this is a great resource for any parent, any educator, but also for adults. Like I said, I read it, I think at 24, and I learned a lot too.
Yeah, I can second that recommendation. We actually had her on the show way back of kind of early days of the show, to talk about that book. It's fantastic because I think sometimes parents are very concerned about talking about consent with my kids means I have to talk about sex with my kids. But I feel like this book does it in a way that's very like at their developmental level and meeting kids where they are and still giving them very valuable lessons without having to like go into super scary conversations that parents feel like their children aren't ready for.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's correct for the age level. I think the age suggestion on there is like 3 to 8. I mean, consent can apply to anything. It's not just about sexual touching. It can be like, can I hug you? No, I don't like that. Please don't do that. And then knowing to respect somebody else's wishes about their body. I think foundationally, that's what it is.
For sure.
So I can't think of a book in particular about like healthy relationships or domestic one, but one of the books that, there's two books that I continuously read over and over again, and that's The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch. It's a short book. I always recommend it. It's an easy read, but it really helps you sort of think about your life in the way of like, how do I live my life to me, my most authentic way, and how do I fulfill my life? So I highly recommend it for anyone that's just looking for a good, easy read that's going to help you feel better. So that one. And then the other common book I read, I always recommend, are The Four Agreements. The Four Agreements. When I first read that book, I wrote down each agreement and huge post-its, and I like put it all over my desk. And it's something that I found a lot of guidance and direction in that book. And so, yeah, those two books are not necessarily healthy relationships, but I think that like those are what I call like my version of self-help books.
That's a book, The Four Agreements, that I've seen on so many bedside tables, and I've always been curious what it is. So,
yeah, in my old desk, I even have like printed out in like frames in my office at my house. And those four agreements applies to everything in your relationships also.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining me. And thank you everyone for listening. If you would like to reach out to us to respond to our last chapter question, or just to reach out to the show, you can do that at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime.
Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza. and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
We did it! You made a podcast!
Wow. Thank you for having us, Taylor. That was fun.
Yeah, it was.
I'm glad.